Welcome to High Latitude Healthy. I'm your host, Dr. Eileen Karpfinger. If you live anywhere in the U.S. besides Hawaii, we have cutting-edge science to share with you that can improve your health. Here's to living high latitude healthy. Hello, and welcome to High Latitude Healthy. I'm your host, Dr. Eileen Karpfinger, and on today's show, I have Doug and Elizabeth Simpson of Tenderfoot Training. This is the first show that I've ever done on High Latitude Healthy that's focusing on animals, but I was so intrigued by Elizabeth and Doug's Instagram and how much they were sharing that was so gentle about training that I thought I'd have them on. So welcome, Doug and Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. We deeply appreciate you inviting us.
Oh, fantastic. Well, great. Let's get started with who you guys are and how you got into training and where we are today.
So we've been involved in animals all our lives. And then when we got married, it sort of came together in a different way for dogs, in that we had tons of animals in our lives, but we were introduced to natural horsemanship. And that's a different way of being around horses than I had been raised with. I was raised on the East Coast with the hoity-toity highfalutin trainers, and Doug was more from a farm environment. But natural horsemanship brought it all together in a way that we deeply appreciated, because it was taking the psychology of the horse into consideration, because you're working with, you know, potentially a 1,500 pound animal, and you don't want to have to use force. You don't want to have to be cruel. But yet a lot of people are, because it's the only way they know how to control such a large animal. And when we saw what they were doing with natural horsemanship, we thought, well, wow, we need to figure this out for dogs, because too many people are using really harsh devices and being very cruel to dogs to control them. And we learned through the natural horsemanship is it just doesn't have to be that way. So our goal overall is to keep dogs in their homes and out of shelters, but we want to really expand the human, I want to say, consciousness about animals in general, that they're just like we are. They're no different. And we need to respect them for who they are.
We had seen many different trainers for all kinds of animals, and we had gotten horses early on, so we went out with some well-known people, and it was just magical watching the horse do whatever their intent was and whatever they wanted. And so after studying that and getting better at it, we were like, we had llamas and goats, and we were like, well, it works on all animals, because it's all based on forms of pressure and release. And so through that, we kind of changed some of the drills, but we applied it for dogs. And it's something that is not, you know, hurtful. It's not painful. They understand what we do, so they learn very quickly. And it's just a whole nice thing that kind of goes. And no matter what dog, what age, what breed, whatever the problem is, we start with three main drills that we put together.
Well, that sounds amazing. One thing that I just heard you say is goats and llamas. Did you do this work with goats and llamas and it worked?
Yes, it works with all animals, because it's how all animals communicate. Okay. I don't care if you're talking about a fish in a fish tank, they work through pressure and release. A gorilla, a giraffe, a horse, a llama, a parrot.
People too?
And humans do it. We're just not aware that we do it, because we're so darn verbal that we're just always, you know, calculating in our heads and responding and reacting, but we're not aware of the subtleties of body language and tones and touch. Yeah. And it's how you do things. It's how you say a word, not the word itself. And we want people to be more aware, self-aware, so that it not only influences their relationship with animals, but also with each other.
Wow. Okay.
You can create their actions just through your body language and being without being hurtful. We've gotten a lot of dogs that have been overly treated not really well, whether it's with certain devices they put on or whatever. And some of them are just messed up from that experience. So it took the people months before they could get trust again.
Wow.
And so we kind of like what we do because it's just so easy and the dogs love it and they learn quick. So
yeah. So in my case, I grew up with Black Labs and Golden Retrievers, and I don't think our family did much training at all. We just kind of just had a dog at our house, and there was lots of kids around and a couple cats, and the dog just kind of made it through and did some dog stuff, like eating all the Christmas cookies while we were out at church, and then got reprimanded after, and that's just how it was.
Right.
And then I grow up and I get a beautiful Briard, and I'm thinking, oh, he's just so sweet and he's so great, but he was so suspicious and so aggressive to anybody that wasn't our family,
right,
that I bet if I had known you, it would have been a better outcome than what we had.
Yeah, all dogs, even in the same litter, they're all different. Just as if you and the same person had 10 kids, don't do that, then each one has a different personality. So we work dogonality, and what's their dogonality, which means just like a personality, are they sensitive, overly sensitive? Are they insecure? You know, all kinds of just different traits that they might have.
Yeah.
And it also helps pick out a right puppy if you can understand, you know, early on what they're doing and what's your energy level like, all kinds of things.
And no matter what, it's nature versus nurture, they're combined, right? It's who their DNA is. Briards were born to be a certain temperament, and we have to understand it and respond appropriately in order to raise them in a way that they'll be a part of our family in a harmonious manner. Mm-hmm. Not every family is meant to have a Briard at all.
Yeah.
And or a lab or a this or a that. It's really finding that match for your household and your personality. Kind of like dating somebody. You don't necessarily marry the first person you date. But you date lots of people, you get lots of experience to know who you are and who's going to best match that.
It's kind of like, what do you want the dog for?
Mm-hmm.
Are they just to have a good buddy in the house, you know, or are you a jogger, or, you know, whatever you want to do? But you need to have a dog that can obtain that skill level of whatever you want them to do.
And too many people pick out dogs because they're cute. It's an impulse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or because they look macho, so they make them feel macho. Or it's, you know, there's a myriad of reasons that people do that, but they really have to take a strong look at themselves and have a more honest conversation before they invite a dog into their home or any animal into their life.
Exactly. Yeah, and during the holidays, I feel like people are getting their present dog for people, and we got to remember, you know, it's an 18-year commitment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And a lot of the dogs show up in the shelters usually at about between 6 months and 2 years, which is when they're going through a huge developmental stage where they're going to be testing you more, their energy is going to be stronger, they're going to be sort of just more in your face. And people realize, oh, what did I do? And then they run them to the shelter when all they need to do is get some good advice, be able to see them through these stages, and then they're going to have an amazing animal in their life.
Yeah.
But people don't have the patience for that sometimes.
Right. And that would be like the teenage stage, right?
Yeah.
Kind of the teenage developmental stage, right?
They get a little bit more belligerent sometimes.
Right.
And usually when they're just hitting their adult stride, like when they're just about to transition into their exquisite adult personality, they get even harder because they're thinking, well, wait a minute, maybe I'm the boss of my own world, maybe I'm the boss of their world too, and they push harder, and then if you just see them through that, then they'll soften again and they'll settle in.
That's nice.
I kind of tell people they're going to do what you allow, and they do what works.
Mm-hmm.
In order to find that out, they're going to challenge you.
Right.
And if you do the right reactions, they're usually done in just 3 to 5 times.
Wow.
So they pick it up very quickly if you do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about this pressure and what do you call it?
Release.
Pressure and release.
So we all use it. Humans use it all the time. And dogs and all animals this is how they live to create right and wrong. They're not based on treats from another dog, you know, or I'll go get you a treat for being thank you. So it's okay to, of course, give dogs the treats, but a lot of people have become vending machines.
Yeah.
So the dog is working for the food and he's not working for the relationship or for the human. So a pressure is simply a motivator for them to make a better choice in the moment than what I see him doing. And there's good and bad pressures. Eye contact can be a form of pressure. So just a look from somebody you know well, you know if they're mad or sad or whatever it is. No words need to be spoken. Eye contact to any animal is a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
One mistake people make is we stare at them all the time because they're cool. But actually, it's kind of like me following you around the house, staring at you wherever you go. It's kind of creepy too. So you don't want to overdo. Everything's about balance. So eye contact can be used very effectively, whether it's through warmth or like, well, I didn't like what you just did.
Mm-hmm.
Startle sounds disrupt their brain. So startle sounds, using your mouth, going, hey, or finger snap or leg pop or foot stomp, they get the dog's attention. If they're focusing at something, it disrupts that. If they're whining or barking, a startle disrupts that. So use startles for disruption. And then distance can be a form of pressure as well. So maybe you're sitting in the front watching the sun goes down, someone across the street's kind of mad at you and they're screaming and yelling at you. No big deal, because they're across the street. They start walking across that street directly towards you, the closer they get, the more intense that will become. But if that were your best friend across the street you haven't seen for a while, the closer they get, the more excited you get. So it's the same scenario, just different emotions. So somebody leaning into your face could be pressure, or maybe they're going to give you a kiss. So distance, everything's about good or bad. It just depends on the emotions in the moment. And people's voices also, everybody has their own voice range. The dog gets used to that range. And so if you're saying no to them or leave it, something serious, you should have a lower voice. And when you praise them, you shouldn't go nuts and crazy and go all yelling and crazy, because the dog goes crazy too, because the energy feeds into them. So we talk about whispering to your dog. When you praise them, it has nothing to do with horse whispers or dog whispers, because the whisper is nice, it's intriguing, comes out with passion. And it's so powerful, if you whisper to your dog, you'll see them turn their head or suck into you. It's so powerful. It's like a vacuum.
Wow. And sometimes when people are trying to correct their dog, and they say no, unfortunately, a lot of times they end up going, no, and it becomes an elongated question. And so what we tell people to do is to stop the word by saying nope.
Instead. Or quit.
Yeah, or quit. But something short, sharp, and abrupt that really catches their ear. Otherwise, the elongated questioning no has zero value.
Mm.
So people will say, but I say no all the time. Well, you're not. You either haven't earned the relationship.
They're like, what are you saying?
Yeah, they're like, really? Yeah.
And when the dog understands what you want, they're going to lick, yawn, sit, or lay down. Lick, yawn, sit, or lay down. If they're blinking, they're thinking. So people talk about reading the dog, which is very important, because if you understand their body language, you can stop thoughts before it turns into the action. Just like jumping, they're gonna change or shift their weight a little bit, and if you catch them before they even leave the ground, they won't leave the ground. So that's a really important thing that we talk about too.
It's also important on the other side of that to catch them when they're making a good decision. A lot of people are really great at saying no, but they forget to praise the good stuff. And so we have to often remind them, hey, look, you just made a really great decision. You need to reward that somehow. And it could be with your voice. It could also be with your touch.
Or body language.
Or your body language, yeah.
And actually, go ahead.
I was just going to ask for what was your most severe case that you've helped with this method?
Oh my gosh, so many.
Yeah, a lot of people recommend this for a lot of dogs that are kind of not in good shape, or they're too reactive or aggressive or whatever. So we've had all kinds, all different deals. We've had from African Borbles, which is a huge dog for killing or going after African lions.
Wow.
So it's got a really big head on it, and they're huge, powerful dogs. So we've done Rotties and Germans, all the breeds, really.
And all issues. But I'd say we would almost compartmentalize. It is the frightened, insecure, reactive dogs that are the most difficult.
Yep.
And what we talk about is a relationship. Everything we do is about relationship. And it's built on love, trust, and respect. So love is usually not what we have to work on. It's the trust and the respect. And whether you're working with an aggressive dog or a fearful, insecure dog, you have to earn the trust for both of them, because they're both coming from a negative space. And you have to earn their respect. So sometimes with a dog, I'll have to earn their respect first, and then and then work on the trust, because maybe they're lunging at me and they're trying to rip my throat out. So I have to earn their boundary respect first, and then I'll move to the trust, and then we can move faster. Other dogs, I have to gain their trust first, and then we move to the respect. Some you're doing kind of simultaneously, depending on how messed up they are.
And actually, we look at it as you should never use loudness. I could talk louder to you now and you'd not hear me any better, probably worse. It's not about loudness, and it should not be about pain. Because when you create pain with all, and every device you put on an animal creates pain. And so you lose trust big time in any of those dogs. The dogs I really like to work the most are the ones that are very insecure, very frightened, and you just work them and you bring out that confidence, and it just becomes a different dog, you know, where now they're ready to go out, they're ready to greet, all these different things happen. A leader to us is simply a decision maker. So the more decisions I make, the more of a leader I become.
Oh.
And if you want to have a big vocabulary, a minimum of 30 to 40 words, up to 1,000. So every time I ask them to do something, I become a leader, very simple, very subtle. And every time they do what I ask, they get a dump of serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin in the left side of their brain, immediately calms them and soothes them, and it's a feel-good thing. So we use that a lot because it's so powerful within them, especially the dogs that are so scared, and all of a sudden you say something they understand, and they're like, you know, you could just see the confidence and the body language and all that stuff. Wow. Accept it.
Because somehow they know the game that's being played. They understand the relationship now.
And if every time they make the right choice, they get either a soothing, calming voice reaching out to them, or a nice, gentle touch, not this pat stuff that people
or
do.
Fast hands, energy, that's not good.
But when we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, when you can respond to them in a way that they go, oh, that made the human happy. And when the human gets happy, I get a butt rub, or I get a chest rub, or I get some soft sounds, and then it becomes a dialogue.
Doesn't work with spouses. It's pretty good for dogs.
It does work. Good touch does work for spouses.
No kidding. Depends on the spouse, for sure. Right. Okay, so you had mentioned something, Elizabeth, about a dog lunging at you and you having to handle it a certain way. I want a story of one particular dog and kind of what had happened from them to begin with and then how it turned around. You're giving me all the general ones, but I want to give me a story.
Yeah, there's just so many to pick from. So I guess the one that comes to mind is a very large dog. The woman got out of the car and...
Bill Mastiff.
No. the dog just leapt at me, literally in like 2 inches from my face, but doing the kind of thing, not being interested in me, but just wanting to go at me. And I stood still, not responding whatsoever, and let the dog kind of do his thing. And I just looked at her like, when are you going to get your dog off of me? Because how do you think this is okay? And she's like, oh, that's not okay. I said, of course not. So through the drills that we do, which are just three simple drills.
But each drill covers multiple things.
But through the drills that we do, I was able to take the leash from her and immediately start to work those drills and teach him that I have a personal bubble that he is not welcome in unless his energy is calm. And he got that message very, very quickly. It really became more a matter of teaching her how to interact with him so that he understood that all humans have personal bubbles, and that his energy and behavior is going to influence how close he gets to be to that person or not. And you know, he didn't end up hurting me or anything. I have been mauled by a few dogs, but
my goodness. But
it was just, I guess it was one of those times that he just, because she allowed it, he thought it was okay to greet any human in such an intensely aggressive way, and he was a big boy. Wow. But very quickly, the minute we explained to him, no, that's not how you do it, and when you do calm down, it's going to feel so good, right, for both of us. And then he just kind of melted and became great.
It's kind of what I tell people is, you want to bring them into your calmness, don't go into their chaos.
Gosh.
A lot of people have a dog that's going kind of nuts, and so they try to overcome it, and they're just another barking dog that messes it that makes it worse. So you need to have that inner calmness in the way you move and your intent and everything else, and they will end up coming into that and getting calm and soothed and all too. So
did that woman take home a dog eventually? That does she have to keep at it all the time, or will he get a sense of something and be able to just be rehabilitated?
So it depends on the dog. Some dogs get it almost instantaneously and people just say, oh, I went home with a completely different dog. And it's been different ever since. Other dogs that, again, because of who they are inside or their experiences, take more repetition and more consistency. So they just need to understand that the humans are going to be consistent, repetitive, and predictable in their responses. Some dogs kind of get off on trying to challenge you to see if they can win. And it's not about dominance and it's not about being alpha. It's just that someone's got to be in charge and it needs to be us, not because we're being dictatorial, but just because we got the bigger brain. We know what's good and bad in the society of manners, and they need to follow through with that. I had to meet with her a couple times because I was really having to change her mentality about what's okay for such a huge dog to behave in a certain way or not. And so it was more about reaching her than it was even the dog.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned a lot of sorry, go ahead.
No, I wanted to ask. I'm still looking for more stories for people, for our listeners, just to get a sense of how this flows.
So for many, it's happened a lot of times, but there's dogs that someone will call or they'll come up and they say, I've been to 5 different trainers and 2 different behaviorists and I just can't get this dog to change. And it's happened many, many times. And it's neat to have those dogs because with what we do and all, and they smell your emotions. They know if you're confident or questioning, they know everything about you.
Yep.
So we come across real calm, but we've had so many dogs like that. And just the way you approach them, there's certain things you need to do so you don't just scare them or intimidate them. So that's how you approach. And when you look at them, all kinds of little different things. But with all those dogs, we've ended up just having them, even in the hour and a half or 2-hour class, just be a totally different dog where one of them couldn't go to get bathed or anything. So I called her out. She brought a brush and we just sat down and just brushed the heck out of that dog.
Oh, that's...
And I'm talking? No. It doesn't matter if I'm talking.
No, that's a really good story that he just reminded me of. So it was this little dog that they had multiple trainers, the veterinarian, the groomer, veterinary behaviorists had all condemned this dog to death at age 10 months.
Wow.
And we were like, this is insane. So we worked with the dog and they said, oh, groomer can't groom it, can't trim its nails, can't do anything to it.
I had that dog.
So we would love to work with you.
he's no longer with me.
We immediately were able to brush him, trim his nails, work the drills with him, handle him because he was bitey, and we could do everything with him. And it was awesome. And we were so proud and so pleased because now he had a future and he wasn't going to be euthanized.
Yeah.
But I will tell you the sad truth is that we called the client 6 months later to say, how are things going? And she said the dog had started to revert. Well, we hadn't seen the dog in quite a few months. And so she hadn't done any changing. And so the dog was starting to revert to the reflect again back to who she was with the dog.
It's not about training the dog as much as it is training the human.
Yep.
And a lot of humans just want this magic pill where they don't have to do any work and just change my dog.
But would you say that there's maybe like 40% of dogs are just, I'm making up this word at the moment, plug and play? Like, is it why some people are successful doing nothing and other people just have a special dog that needs a lot of work? Is it because there are just some dogs that are chill?
100%. Because so, people will have like a golden retriever and they'll think, oh, I am just the best dog trainer ever.
I know. Yeah.
And then they get a Briard or they get a Malinois, right?
Yeah.
And then they find out they know nothing.
Right.
Because they had their plug and play dog. They thought they were awesome at it.
So when you train them, most any dog though, but to different levels, people, you know, they'll do everything, they'll call a month later and go, he's not doing this as well as he used to. And it's like, well, so are you still doing the drills? Are you doing what created the success? And they're like, well, no, he had everything. So you can't just stop what you're doing that created success.
Yeah.
You can lighten up a lot, but you still need to keep that in their brain on, you know, what to be like and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I talked about learning about dogs' behavior. Well, every movement the human makes has meaning to that dog. They're a master at reading body language. So that's the problem with a lot of people is they are confusing their dog all the time just from what they're doing with their body. So we talk about how to understand what you're doing and what it means to the dog. When you have that connection, it is a constant conversation without words, just reading each other.
Mm.
So that's a whole nother level that you can get on too.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It isn't.
They understand it so well, they pick it up in just 3 to 5 times. You can have a 30-word vocabulary in an hour.
It what I say is it's like riding a bike. You watch somebody ride a bike and you go, oh, I can do that. Then you get on the bike and you go, wait a minute, oh, I'm falling off over here. But the second you learn how to keep your balance, then it kind of just becomes a part of who you are.
Yeah.
And so again, this is really about people being willing to look in the mirror and see, well, what am I doing that's messing things up, that's allowing this dog to think it's okay to jump in people's faces? What am I not doing that's not stopping a behavior appropriately?
Yeah.
And so it's just the hardest part is getting people to look in the mirror.
That's so two of our rules are, you're always trying to do as little as you can to get results. And the other thing is you don't want to scare or frighten the dog. So all devices create pain. So, and people get kind of even aggressive with the leashes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much about, you know, there's been like a lot of click and treat people. We've had a couple groups of them come up to find out what we do, because what we do isn't naturally in the dog world.
That's crazy, isn't it? It sounds like exactly what you're doing is the only natural way to handle a dog.
Well, we stumbled upon this, but we actually created it. It was for horses, and we had to make some little changes. But it's really amazing to watch because they just understand it. And people are always going, what'd you do to my dog? Because they're just being so great already.
And in the dog world, there's the extremists that he talked about that do like the vending machine of food is the answer to everything. And they sort of have a mentality of never say no, which is just not realistic. And then there's the other extreme, which is like use your pinch, your shock, your choke, or whatever. And so it's people tend to go to extremes when working with animals. And we live right here in the middle. where you don't have to go to either extreme because you're living in an understanding way.
Balance part.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So I've seen some videos, mostly of you, Doug, with the dogs, like doing some training. And I think you have, maybe it's your own dog that, a collie of some kind.
I have a black and white Aussie.
Aussie,
and
yeah.
Another dog we picked up down in the Four Corners area.
I can tell how smart your dog is. Oh my goodness. And just so aware.
Aussies are, all the breeding or all the herding dogs are brilliant.
Yeah.
And then there are other ones too. But yeah, but see, if you know what you're doing, those really smart dogs are great. But if you don't know what you're doing, they'll really abuse you because you're so smart.
That's what my Briard did to me. Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, so big. But are you guys partial to any breed based on your need for dog? What did you call it? Dogality, not dogility.
Dognality. We've had three different sets of nine dogs, and some filter in and out. But we've always had a lot of dogs because we use them in trainings. Because people are like, well, it responds to a big dog or a small dog. So we've had little dogs all the way up to Rottweilers.
Oh,
we've always had an Aussie, but we've had mixed breeds. We've had Golden Retrievers, Rottweilers, Pomeranians. Just kind of you name it, we've had it.
we have this dog here that we went down and watched two dogs. One was healthy, one was not. And she picked the one that was not healthy. And so we took him to a doctor, and both his front feet were crushed. And they recommended maybe removing one of the legs. And another vet said maybe both of the legs. And then we did a whole bunch of things. The dog would lay down, but he also had vertebrae out in his neck and down his whole spine.
This is a rescue dog that you found?
Yeah.
Must have been a car accident or something.
He'd been badly injured somehow, and
reservation,
no one attended to him.
So anyway, and his whole spine was out. So we just did stuff. We know of a great chiropractor.
That's what I am.
That looked at him, and we've had him work on our horses too, and it helped a lot. We also used a lot of red light treatment on him with just ice bags or corn bags actually, but frozen stuff. And it took about a year, and he could walk.
Wow.
But he would never try to jump up on anything or anything because it just hurt too much.
Yeah, right around the collar, yeah.
And then he just started healing, and now he's just a nut.
Oh, okay, awesome.
All the legs are there.
So. Little stiff somewhere, or is he pretty?
No, he's right now, he's great.
He's like a new dog, new engine.
He's 5 years old. We got him when he was just under a year, and it took him a full year. He really couldn't walk much at all.
I would imagine.
So, yeah. But now he's really quite great.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting.
So,
what does someone, because you can tell somebody what to do from the start when they just get a puppy, that might be a good start. And then let's also talk about people who need you because they've started and they've done a bunch of stuff and now they really need you. So talk about when you get a puppy, what you should do so that you don't end up needing you guys.
Well, first of all, kind of see how old the person is, how maneuverable the human is, to be sure that you're not getting a young puppy where you're getting up every night and all those things. Sometimes it's good to get a little bit of an older pup that maybe could be easier or already is housebroken.
Right.
So kind of look at what you want. And then they're learning every moment. So all the drills that we do, we just start right away on doing those. And we've had a couple litters ourselves, but one of them, for her, we did a whole bunch of things. And when it was already 8 or 9 weeks, it kind of was pretty good on everything.
So you want to handle them calmly and give them confidence in being touched. So that's very important, because for the duration of the dog's life, they need to feel comfortable with the veterinarian touching him, the groomer touching him, you touching him. So that means, you know, getting in their ears and doing massages that feel good, getting into the gums and the mouth and feel good. We have a drill that we do called the Love and Trust Roll, where we put them on their back and we massage their tummy and all their toes and flick their nails. And sometimes they'll really fuss with that because it's a vulnerable position, but you have to just be patient and see through it.
And until a power play, right?
Until they enjoy it, you know. Then they switch and go, oh, that feels pretty good.
Yeah. We believe fully in crate training, because crate training helps you, house training, it helps them learn independence and patience, how to be alone and away from you, so it can prevent separation anxiety.
You need alone.
And no matter where they are in the world, if they have their crate, they feel safe and at home. And it gives them their safe space. Mm-hmm. So
another thing we do, which a lot of veterinarians like what we do, because when the dog goes there, they have manners. But we get on the ground for little dogs and just go up under their front legs and pick them off the ground just an inch. And their feet kind of go like this a little bit and squirm a little bit. And then they get calm, and then you lay them down. Then you pick them up, they go a little bit, and by the third time when you pick them up, they just relax and just are still. So you're kind of just teaching them skills for going to the vet, or us working on them.
Yeah.
And all those things to prepare them for what we need to do.
Yeah.
We're going to jump way back here for a second. Pressure and release.
Mm.
The most important is not the pressure. It's the release of the pressure. That is the moment they learn. So distance, if I took a step towards them and they did what I wanted, I immediately need to take the step back. So whatever, even eye contact, if I looked at them and they got quiet, I need to look away. Good job, and look away. So always release, and humans are not good with this. That's why I brought it back up. They're not good at all. So they're really good at the pressure part. They don't know when to release and let it go. And that's the moment that's the most important.
Wow. Okay.
Just jump back. Sorry.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. So we have another 15 minutes or so. And I'm curious if you guys have, what do you do when you have a dog like my Harvey that, by the way, we did all the things right, and it was still very hard to keep him, you know, like he was trained a lot and everything. And we did the food thing, but we also did the, eventually it was like, I'm going to have to put a pinch collar on you so you don't chase those squirrels while I'm running down the street with you. but what does it take for somebody to come to you, or do you have an online version of things, or?
So I'm first.
So yes, we have a video on our website. You can get it.
It's four hours,
8 parts. It takes you through the whole thing to advanced training. It gives you more details than you ever imagined. So it's just an incredible tool.
Great.
But what I was going to say is, and our website, by the way, is tenderfoottraining.com, is that impulse control is one of the most important things that you can teach. And you can teach that from a very early age. So they can know all their sits and downs and stays or whatever, but if they don't really have good impulse control, and they can switch from what we call the right side of the brain, which is the adrenaline side, the side that says squirrel, I'm on it, to their left side of their brain and learn how to self-regulate, where they're putting out the more of the calming chemicals and they're becoming more mindful. So the impulse control drills that we do help them switch from that impulsive reactive brain to the calming and soothing brain, where they just can watch the squirrel all day long. Just don't be dragging me there. Don't be barking at it. Don't be having a relationship with the squirrel. Yeah, you can watch him. It's not a bad squirrel. So that, I think, is one of the most crucial things that you can teach, and that's what our drills teach.
So in the drills, there's 3 drills. First drill teaches patience and calmness.
Mm-hmm.
Teaches them not to react to anything that walks or runs by, animal or person or whatever it is. It teaches them how to release the pressure on the collar. And
what does that mean?
So when they lean into the collars, dogs have opposition reflex, oppose or fight pressure. So we also do a drill in the second part drill to rewire the brain instead of fight the pressure. Like if I pull on a leash going in this direction, they feel pressure over here and they lean against it.
Mm-hmm.
What we teach them is if you give to pressure, you'll release pressure.
Right.
Very easy to teach. Takes about 2 minutes. So now, when I pull a dog in, and I've had dogs that are 143, 163 pounds, so big dogs, and so maybe the dog just went off a little bit and I was going to pull him back in, I don't want him to fight me. I want him to be light and give to it, especially a big dog. So part of that is teaching them how to give to pressure. We walk. If the dog is in front of your toes with their feet, they know they're leading you. They're going to be in the right side of the brain, the adrenaline brain, at a very high frequency, ready to lunge and bark at whatever comes by. The dog is beside you, left, right, or follow, teach all of them. Then they're releasing left side of the brain, they're releasing calming chemicals, paying attention to how fast I go, when I stop, do I go left, do I go right? Now they're paying attention like a good dance partner.
Do they, so their feet have to be behind your feet?
Depends on the dog, but training, yes. I know today, these days, a lot of the thing going around is the walk is for your dog, so it's a sniff walk. So wherever they want to go, let them go. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Because you'll never have a good walk. So what we do is we say, okay, let's walk. But at some point, I'll stop, go into the first drill, which is free time around me on the leash. And then they can sniff and pee and do whatever they want to do. And then we'll walk again. So I put that in there, but I don't just let them pull me around on the whole walk.
Mm-hmm. And two, it's important for them to choose to be behind your toe line, not be held there by a tight leash. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people say, yeah, he walks right beside me on the you know, my left or whatever. And I'm like, well, how tight is your leash? And they're like, well, yeah, I got a hold of him.
Yeah.
Like, well, he's not learning anything. He's not choosing it. You're controlling him and he's still feeling pressure on the collar and becoming desensitized to it. So it's about having that little bit of a smile in your leash. And that they're choosing, which means that they're using the left side of the brain. Otherwise, they're just ready for you to let go of the leash and or rip it out of your hands.
Right. And so if you have somebody that, you know, is listening here that wants to, they can do your 4 hours online, but they need more handheld holding. What else do you guys have? What else do you offer? Do you offer?
We do a Zoom just like this. We've done it all kinds of other countries with people and stuff too, so we can just do a Zoom. Usually we have them get the 4-hour video if we can, because it saves us from repeating some of the verbiage in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we can just jump right into doing the drills and stuff.
But it's been so cool because since we've been on Instagram, we now have clients in Australia, New Zealand, Mongolia.
That's really like 20 countries. So that was kind of a neat spread out for that.
That's really great. And do you have anybody coming to you still?
Oh yeah.
So you're in Colorado. Where in Colorado?
All over.
We're just outside of Boulder.
Okay.
And we travel a little bit within the state, and we've been to, like, people send us to New York and stuff like that. But people will come to us from other states and stay a week, and we work with them every day.
You stay for 4 days, and we also have trained some other people to be trainers, so they've kind of been dispersed through. What we do is pretty unique compared to what most of them do, and people love it. So we're just trying to have other people pass the knowledge, because there will be a point where we won't be doing it.
Yeah, you don't want Tenderfoot to die when we die.
Right. So I'm a chiropractor, and so is my husband. And some of the work that we've done with horses, I don't do a lot of it, but I've dabbled in that and other animal care, because in some states we can do it, in some states we can't. But I've noticed for horses specifically, and my daughter's working with horses a lot right now, that it is literally a whisper touch on them that gets the best results. It's not this clunking in their sacrum and things like that. It's mostly almost like meningeal work. And I feel like what you guys are talking about is something that is bringing the dog to that awareness of that subtle awareness that they're so used to, but they haven't seen in their human, right? And so I think you guys have a really beautiful program going here.
Thank you.
People do, humans, primates, is they like to pat animals.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically hitting an animal. And so when you do that, you can kind of see the dog and how they, their expression, and even horses too. Most animals like to be touched with calmness, not with energy. And then the energy will pick them up.
And so is there anything about petting on the top or like stroking the top of their head versus under their chin? What are those messages?
So think of a young puppy and an adult dog. And maybe the adult comes up to the puppy. The puppy will usually lick under the chin saying, I'm little, I'm a baby, don't do anything. Horses do it too. And then, so they're going to do that. So a dog that's really nervous, I will pet them underneath their chin and help bring up their head a little bit slowly for some pride and confidence. And then dogs, if you pet them on the side, it's kind of a neutral place. You don't want to just go up right off the bat and pet a dog on top of the head unless you know them, because that's you kind of dominating them a little bit. And they don't like that as much until they know you and like you, and then it will feel very good for ears and all those things too.
Okay. That's great.
You want to think about stroking them like their mother washing them and bathing them, because that actually changes to the alpha brainwave, which is the calming and soothing brainwave. So it's already built in their DNA. So if you can do long, firm strokes, sometimes a dog will like a good scritch sort of at the base of the tail or at the chest, because they really can't touch their own bodies. They can't touch their own chest easily. They can't touch the base of their tail.
Right.
But
yeah.
They can appreciate us getting in there with some nice, soft stretching, but not that pat, 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 pat. It's just aggressive. It's too much energy. We do it to horses. We do it to dogs. It's not what they
do. Gee, you do it to me.
Well,
it's more of a fist though when you
I wonder if you guys have seen any dogs with those little silicone booties on their feet, or any other kind of taking them away from their natural selves, little raincoats, all that kind of silliness. Talk
balance,
to me about that a
balance
little bit.
In all things, because the coats that we've created on dogs are not always natural, right? If your dog does not look like a wolf, it is not, anything in there is not natural. The droopy ears, the thinner coat, the single coat, it's just not natural. And if you're living
I actually have a show that I did with a guy, he's a pharmacist in Idaho, who talked about dogs wearing spandex and the results. Male dogs couldn't mate. They couldn't produce effective enough sperm for almost 8 months before they could impregnate. And then they did it to female dogs too, and it was almost a year before they could impregnate. So it's taking away some mitochondrial activity because of the sun and the grounding and stuff like that.
And there's a difference between talking about putting a coat on them, like if you put maybe a wool sweater, versus something more synthetic.
Yeah.
So they might still need the coat, but you sometimes have to look at, well, what is it made of? Just like we have to look for ourselves, right? We're putting all these, you know, artificial things on our bodies.
Cashmere here, baby.
But so it's you know, definitely need coats sometimes. They definitely need protection on their feet if they're walking in areas where there's like the salt that they put on roads and things like that. That gets into their feet and then they lick it off, and we know a dog that died licking that stuff off.
Yeah, and then the pesticides on the park ground and all that stuff.
All of it. It's just awful.
Yeah.
So we're huge proponents too of eating a natural diet, of monitoring how many vaccines you're giving, and knowing what you're giving, right?
They give so many, and they give the same dosage to a Chihuahua they would a Dobie.
Have you guys heard yet that every vaccine now made for dogs and cats, I don't even know about horses, is now an mRNA?
As
of now, every shot that might have been given before has turned into an mRNA. That's just
Yeah.
And people just don't, you know, it's not that you don't vaccinate your dog. Yes, vaccines have their place, but it's educate yourself, ask your veterinarian questions, be happy with your veterinarian's answers, because, you know, we've been at this for a lot of time.
Or can you do a titer, a blood titer, instead
do the blood titer,
see if you're still good or not.
Some vets will just refuse or say, well, why not just give the cheaper shot? Well, because it's going to affect my dog in a negative way, possibly.
Yep.
So it's about self-education and asking the right questions, which then forces the medical community to do a better job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about how we find you again.
Tenderfoottraining.com.
Tenderfoottraining.com.
We're also on Instagram, which is tenderfoot_training. And we have a great following, lots of good, helpful tips. We've got hundreds and hundreds of reels on it right now. So, and we're hoping to start a YouTube channel soon, but
great.
Not there yet.
Yeah. And you're on your website, you have the 4-hour program. Do you have any other offerings?
Yes.
There's some little things on there that you can see little snippets of, but the 4-hour video is in detail, all the 3 drills that we do, plus jumping and just all biting, all kinds of different issues that they have. So that's a really good one, and it's really didn't hold back all the details. It's really full of what you need to know.
Fantastic.
And you could just watch one thing and pause it and practice it, and watch another one and pause it and practice. And it goes really systematically, really fast.
Can I add one thing?
I want you to just, I was just going to offer each of you anything else you want to just share of any wisdom.
So we talk about not using harsh devices, and we consider just about any device out there to be fairly harsh because that's why they work. But what we do use is a wide, flat, stiff collar. Too many people put a really skinny collar on their dog, and that's what digs into the trachea and the thyroid and does damage. And they're working because it hurts too, right? Yeah. But if you take 3 fingers, you can push 10 times as hard against your neck and it doesn't hurt because it's dispersing the energy. So a wide, flat collar that's stiff, not the squishy kind.
Will you mean like webbing?
We use like a nylon webbing.
Okay.
But it's the actually the gentlest thing you can put on, and
as soon as you teach them not to pull on the leash, which happens very quickly, then you can put a little string on their neck if you want, because there shouldn't be any pulling whatsoever. So this is and a really small dog should be at least 1 inch wide, but they're getting little cat collars put on them. And that just cuts into one spot really deep.
Right. Yeah. Because they're pulling. And even if they're little, you can't even tell how they're pulling. I was driving the other day, and I saw a big guy with this little teeny dog. And he pulled the dog right off the ground as he was just trying to correct it. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I couldn't even understand how well the dog's going to fare. Because
like a yo-yo.
From the collar, he pulled him right off the ground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And people do that with bigger dogs.
So we also talk about get a feel in your hands. Because if you feel a pop on the leash when you do something, the dog felt exactly what you felt on the other end. So
What do you mean that?
A lot of people jerk on their dog or they give a pop on the leash. The dog feels that.
Sure.
But you feel it too in your hand. So if you don't need to give them those at all. So you don't need to give them any pops. You don't need to do anything. You just teach them without doing that. It's really easy. So if I wanted to cue them to walk, I wouldn't jerk them or pop the leash. I would just give a steady pull.
And then a quick release the second they join up.
Right. So I would just give a steady pull and immediately they get a loose leash. But you don't have to give those jerks and pops on your dog because you don't need to.
And it also causes the dog to then go, oh God, my human's going to jerk my head again. So they will throw on the back pressure and fight you.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you,
Elizabeth
and Doug, for joining us on High Latitude Healthy. Once again, these guys are from Tenderfoot Training. And you can find them online and on Instagram, maybe still on Facebook. I'm not even sure.
Yes.
It sounds like they've had great success with people and dogs, and I hope that we can all learn from them.
Thank you so much for having us.
Have a good evening.
It's been a pleasure. Have a nice one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
High Latitude Healthy and all the show notes can be found at wdrt.org and as well on Spotify, YouTube, and on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Find us and follow us to keep up with our interviews. And if you'd like to email Dr. Eileen, email her at highlatitudehealthy@gmail.com. Here's to living high latitude healthy.